Hello, everyone. Mr. P here, and I'm here with Mr. Dave, of course. Hello, Mr. Dave.
Hello, Mr. P.
We are the Geeky Guys. Welcome to ShowPod. And today it's a special one because we've got a guest coming on.
Yes, indeed, we have. He's the Interim Vice Provost for Academic Affairs, a professor in the biology department at Duke University in Chicago, formerly holding the titles of Earl McLean Professor, Department Chair, Dean of Natural Sciences, and Interim Dean of Arts and Sciences. He's won lots of awards, but we don't want to get too much into that because he was science consultant, one of the science consultants, on Star Trek Discovery, amongst others, and he's coming on now.
Mohammed, you were one of a team of science experts that they brought on for Star Trek Discovery Series 3 and 4.
Season 3 and 4, yep. Yeah, it's an honor and a privilege. I was very happy that they brought me in.
We're going to talk about how that happened in a moment.
Sure.
But let's just go back, just talk a little bit about how you got into science in the first place. Was that something you always wanted to pursue?
Yeah, I was always big on science. I was always big on biology in particular. What really solidified it, though, was in college when I took my first genetics course. I'd put it off until junior year, my third year of college, because people had said genetics was really hard. So I'd said, oh, maybe I better wait and do it later. But then when I finally took it, I loved it. I loved the logic to it. I loved the sort of mathematics behind it, things like that. And then the following semester, the end part of my third year, I took a class called evolutionary genetics. And I used to just sit in the front row, just, you know, in rapture, just like... listening to what the professor was saying. I would actually tape record it and listen to it when I was working out later because I was so excited about what he was covering. So for me, that sealed the deal. And that is the kind of science I still do today. I still am an evolutionary geneticist. I study those two fields, genetics and evolution, especially the intersection of those.
I was just thinking now, I wonder if he's going to say, well, I watched Star Trek when I was younger.
I was watching it through the whole time. And I will say Star Trek definitely, it wasn't the cause, but I think it helped reinforce it. And I do remember at the end of my second year of college, a professor asking me what I wanted to do when I finished. And I said, you know, I'd love to consult on science in Star Trek. This is while Next Generation was airing. So little did I know, like, you know, 25 or whatever, years later, get the opportunity to do
Ask
that.
And you shall receive.
Yeah, you got there in the end.
Much later, but yes. Though not as my job, just as a little like aside.
So how did consulting on Star Trek happen?
So all my Star Trek things kind of connected. So I went to my first convention in 2014, and I had never been to a convention before. My daughter actually suggested we go, knowing that Patrick Stewart was going to be at this convention. She knew that I would be more likely to go. She was at the time was a big Doctor Who fan. When I went to this convention, this was Dragon Con in Atlanta. When I went there in 2014, I saw that they had these science talks and other sorts of scholarly talks that would happen there. And they used popular culture or sci-fi or something like that to try to introduce and entice people to learn more about the subjects. So one of my colleagues who's here at Duke University, his name is Professor Eric Spana, he was doing a talk on the genetics of wizarding using examples from Harry Potter. And the room was packed. There was like over 200 people in there, like really excited to hear this genetics talk. So I asked the director of the Trek track at Garrett at Dragon Con, who's Garrett Wong, who plays Harry Kim in Star Trek Voyager, if I could contribute to that. So that got me into speaking. That was my first talk at conventions. That was 2016 at Dragon Con. I started doing that more and more. Doing that was what got me to actually write a book related to some of these talks. At the time, Princeton University Press reached out to me and said, would you be interested in writing a popular book? And I said, well, the talk I give, the most common popular talk I give is just Why Evolution is True. There literally is a book with exactly that title, Why Evolution is True. So I can't duplicate that. They said, well, are there any other sort of popular talks you give? I said, well, there is, but it's not what you might expect. And that was, of course, the convention-related talks and putting a bunch of those together. But they went for it. So that book came out in 2018. That helped, you know, basically get my name out a little bit more. And I think that same year in 2018, I think that's when it happened, I was giving a talk at Dragon Con with my friend, Dr. Aaron McDonald, on the science in Star Trek Discovery Season 1. And at that talk, you know, in the back row, you know, there was, of course, the big audience of just regular Congress. The back row, Mary Chifo, Ken Mitchell, and Jane Brooke all came and sat in and really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And you know, they asked some questions. And then afterwards, Jane came up to me and said, hey, you know, I'm a Duke alumna and you work at Duke. And we got to talking, we got to be friends. I actually invited her to come here and speak to some of my students. And I gave her a copy of my book, and she actually had annotated it, asked all sorts of wonderful questions about it. And I could talk more about, there's another connection with Jane I'll come back to. But she offered to connect me with Erica Lippold, who was one of the writers in Star Trek Discovery. And I had a great chat with Erica. Erica then connected with Michelle Paradise, who was the showrunner. And yeah, a couple of weeks later, I got this call from Michelle Paradise saying, we'd love you to do something. The fascinating part, too, is Michelle said, we'd like to pair you with a physicist who we just brought on board, too. Her name is Dr. Erin McDonald, the person I was getting that talk with. I was like, I know Erin. She had no idea that we even knew each other because we came in from completely different angles and just landed around the same time.
Together.
Now, in the case of Erin, she is the science advisor for the franchise. So she is basically on retainer with Paramount Plus to do this thing all the time. I'm more like a contractor. So the analogy I like to say is she's the sheriff of science in Star Trek. And I'm just somebody who occasionally gets a deputy badge to come help out.
I suppose you're brought in when your specialist fields are required.
Exactly. Especially if there's something, you know, biology in general, but especially evolution or genetics, that's going to be more likely when they would call me. Whereas if there's, you know, anything else, basically they would start with Dr. Erin McDonald and wait and see if she says she can cover it or not. Her specialty is astrophysics, but, you know, she obviously just knows a lot of science in general too.
Bring in the guy.
So how does that process work? What actually comes through to you? Do you get a script or do you just get a document with some of the information on there, what they want advising on, and then you get back to them? How does that process work?
Sure. It's a great question. There's a whole bunch of different possibilities. The smallest level might literally just be a text from somebody like Dr. Erin McDonald saying, is this line of dialogue okay? Which nearly always my answer is like, you have to give me the context, because, you know, the sentence might be okay, but it may not fit in what's happening around there. But, you know, sometimes it is very basic and I just text back literally like an SMS text. That's the most basic. Sometimes it's more an episode thing, like there's a plot happening with a particular episode. So for season 3 of Star Trek Discovery, episode 5, which I think was called Die Trying, There was a thread in there. The reason they were going to go find the seed ship, as you might remember in that episode, was there were this set of aliens who had arrived at the space station. They were sick. They had a disease. And this was the thing that they posed to me. They said, we need a disease. We need to be not communicable. We need to be very hard to cure, even in the future. It needs to be based on something that they've eaten. So, you know, my suggestion there was like, oh, okay, I have an idea for this. Why don't we do it using prions? So these are these infectious proteins. You might remember these were the cause of mad cow disease. Right. Back in the 1990s in the UK. So that's very, very, very hard to cure today. And I imagine it won't be much easier in the near future, at least. And right now, there's no cure for prion disease. So, like, you know, you remember what they did in the UK with mad cows. They just killed all the cows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So they're not going to do that with aliens.
That was the only way to do it, wasn't it?
Yeah, but basically I connected that, and I had a whole bunch of like science connections of this to the fruit. There were some leaps that had to happen because prion disease you tend to get by eating contaminated meat. So this had to be a vegetable or some sort of plant matter. So I found actually a scientific paper which suggested some prion-like behavior in a plant. So basically I'd look up in the scientific literature some of the pieces to justify the leaps. All of this doesn't get explained in the episode, of course, because I mean they're not giving a seminar on the science. It's just like a couple of lines of dialogue. But I like having it in my back pocket for the viewer who will go on social media and say, well, actually, that would never work, and let me tell you why. So I have the answers ready both for me as well as for the show. So that's the intermediate. So the smallest would be like just a line of dialogue. The intermediate might be an episode thing, and the larger might be an arc. So a big one, for example, in season 4, I did something else with season 3, which you can come back to if you want. But for season 4, they actually brought me in before there were any scripts at all or anything like that. And what they said is, we're going to have some truly alien aliens. So we're going to call them Species 10C. We want them to be communicating in some way that universal translators are unable to translate. And there has to be a process, like a back and forth for figuring this out. So my part to this was the physical basis for communication. And my suggestion there was like, let's use chemical communication. And I specifically suggested the use of these hydrocarbons. Hydrocarbons are used in the animal kingdom as, you know, pheromones at times and things like that. And they're especially good because they're very flexible. We can make really complex forms with them and things like that. So you could come up with things that maybe we humans have never encountered and maybe therefore would evoke a reaction we can't anticipate presently. So there was a lot of back and forth with at that point with the writers, with the VFX folks for what is this going to actually look like. Some of it was, as you mentioned, the script. At that point, they would give me parts of the script, and I would say, well, you know, this sentence right here doesn't quite fall. It's not the way somebody would say it if they were a scientist looking at this kind of thing. Let's tweak the language. So that was a much more involved process. And of course, the most involved would be like Dr. Erin McDonald, who actually just sits through the writers' rooms. I have gone to like and iteration of the writer's rooms, but I've never sat through the entire, say, season of writer rooms or anything like that. That's beyond my scope.
You get to sit and just do the fun stuff.
I think all of it is fun. Is my impression, but I'm appreciative that they involve me at all.
I think some of the best sort of alien based episodes are the ones where they have to think out of the box and they have to develop something from scratch because they can't just use the, like you say, they couldn't with the 10C, they couldn't use the universal translator. It's always quite interesting, like you say, look at different ways of communication and how that might work.
Yeah, and this was very collaborative, I should stress too, because I was brought in for the sort of the physical basis for this and how the reception was happening, things like that. But they also brought in these linguists, these folks from METI, messaging extraterrestrial intelligence, to actually figure out like how does this go into language? Because I mean, from my perspective, I kind of stopped. It's like, and that therefore is language, and I just kind of would wave my arms. They're like, no, that's not good enough. We need to fill that a little bit more. So they suggested this use of the Linkos language, which is a real thing. They basically suggested how you could take these different hydrocarbon forms to then translate them into specific words and create a vocabulary and translate using math and things like that. It's great, great collaborative work. And what was nice is like there was a collaboration in the writer's room for doing it. But if you remember in the episode, that was also how they solved this communication. Remember, they brought down Detmer and some other people, and each of them was bringing in their own little expertise. And like, oh, this reminds me of like piano keys. And they were all bringing it into it. But that's essentially how the episode was created too, which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, bringing different minds together and approaching it in a different way.
Exactly. And as fans, we do like it when you can tell that there's real science involved.
Yeah.
It adds more realism to it. And Star Trek's done that for years. You know, that's one of the bases that, like you say, they bring them in before they even start and say, give us the realism behind what we want to do.
Yeah. And the writers love science. Like when I'm talking to them, they want to understand this. They're not just like, fill in the word and we'll move on. They're not like that at all. They want to understand the science, and they're very excited about the science. I always joke about this in my talks when I'm talking about this sort of thing, that they'll tell me sometimes, your job is so cool. I'm like, you literally write Star Trek. You're telling me my job is cool. Like you're at the peak of cool.
Talking about the peak of cool, you get to do something now which is limited to just a few people, which is you get to take part in our first feature, which is Geeky Guy's favorites. So basically, on my card, I've got three favorites, 1 to 3. You're going to pick a number. And I'm going to tell you, ask the question, and it's just a random, what's your favorite for a particular thing? And we'll just see what you come out with. So if you give me a number between 1 and 3, Mahali.
2.
Right in the middle. Oh, I like this one. So, okay. So what is your favorite, and you can't say Star Trek because that's cheating.
Okay.
Your favorite non-Star Trek, either film or TV show that has science in it, that's not Star Trek, and why?
So for the science, or just because I enjoy the plots?
I'm going to say for the science, actually.
Okay, so that changes the answer. What I was going to say.
I might go back and talk about the other one. But
okay,
as a when you're a scientist and you watch something on television, I'm guessing that you either go, "Oh, they've got that quite right, actually," or "Oh, they've completely just made all that up." You might like it for both reasons.
That wouldn't work.
Yeah, you might like it for both reasons. So
I'll give a couple answers for that one. So that if you think about the areas that I know, something like genetics, I really like the series Orphan Black.
Right.
I thought it was very interesting that, and, you know, the way they used a lot of like specific genetics terms and even mentioned specific genes quite often. And often there were ones I hadn't heard of, but I look at them like, wow, that's exactly right. That's what that gene does. So I was very impressed. They clearly had a lot of science advisors on there. More generally, The Expanse seems to be very good. There's not so much biology there. The proto-molecule thing is definitely not biology. That's just out there. But
it was an interesting idea.
It's an interesting idea. Yeah. And the way they handle, for example, the way they accelerate and decelerate and things like that, that in terms of creating gravity, that was quite interesting. I thought that was very good. So those would be ones. And of course, The Martian is a classic one in that regard. They clearly had a lot of science involved. But if you're just talking about like a fun show, my initial answer was going to be For All Mankind. But there's not much science in it. I mean, there's a little bit, but not really.
Okay.
Yeah, and it makes me think of Michael Crichton and Jurassic Park. And I remember hearing about when he wrote that book, he wanted to put as much real science and sort of solid science into it as possible.
Totally.
You've had a small involvement and a little bit of a prodigy in Strange New World as well, in giving your expertise. Was that sort of the same process as when you're on Discovery, or did that
work? So my work in Strange New World has not come out yet, but yeah, in terms of how it worked, it was, again, nothing's come out yet, but it's been basically correspondences with the writers. So some of it by email, some of it by Zoom, you know, chatting about topics, but that's probably about as much as I can say.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah, it was the interesting thing about
what's happening in Dowling, the new series. Prodigy. Come on, you can tell us now.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Dowling Prodigy was where all the way through the series, they didn't quite know what species he was. They were trying to work it out, and none of the scanners could recognize him. And
that was one that Aaron and McDonald and I had like a couple of just quick chats on. So in terms of Dal and so episode 15, where they came out with what his basically his hybrid genetic ancestry, that she and I had a couple of courses. That wasn't with the full writer's room when I did that. And there was something else I've done with Prodigy, which was with more of the writer's room, but that has not yet come out. But the Dal thing was just a couple of, it was more like the quick lines of dialogue by text kind of thing. It was more like that.
Did Aaron McDonald consult on the Orville as well? I can't remember if she did or not.
That I know of. I've never heard that she's done that, but so I don't think
maybe
so.
Maybe not.
Andre Beaumaris is the science advisor.
Andre Beaumaris is one of the showrunners, I believe. And he was, of course, as you know, the science consultant for the end of TNG all the way through Voyager. Yeah. That became a writer for Enterprise.
Because I think he used to say that the scripts at that point, they used to just send the scripts up with science and then he'd look through it and say, no, you can't do that. And they'd change it.
Yeah.
And now a word about our sponsor. Are you looking to take your business or idea online? Then Namespace has you covered. From personal websites, e-commerce, and fully managed IT services, see what Namespace can do for you today at namespace.rocks.
Have you had a chance to use your speciality in Drosophila yet in any of the consulting on Star Trek?
No, not in Star Trek, no.
it's still Queen of Genetics and Cinderella of Genetics, isn't it?
Totally. Though, I mean, you could say yes in the sense of the hydrocarbons that is one of the pheromone types that a lot of the fruit flies use. So, I mean, you could say indirectly yes, but there's not been to my knowledge, there's not been a direct reference to Drosophila yet in there. I do talk about that in some of my talks on conventions or on my YouTube channel. I sometimes will reference Drosophila work then. Yeah,
I think actually you're going back to conventions. Actually, it's really nice that there's a lot of science input in conventions now. There's astronauts that go there. There's lots of different scientific backgrounds go and do talks as well. Yeah, it's really good.
I love that people are willing to come sit in through a talk on science and just which has a framing around Star Trek or whatever fandom. I think that's fantastic. And I love using that as an outlet. I do the same thing here in the classroom at Duke University. I teach a class that's literally called Genetics, Evolution, Star Trek, and that's how it appears on your transcript. But it is the introductory course in genetic and evolution that the majors take, but it's all framed using examples from Star Trek. So there's a narrative that people can get more excited about.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I think if you just go back to conventions, if you take out the COVID years and just remove them a moment, sort of in the last sort of 5 to 10 years, there's been a lot more science in conventions. It starts with just one person. We noticed in the UK, you just have one astronaut or one scientist talking. And now, like you say, there's full panels. And even people like Professor Brian Cox, for example, here from the UK, he does arena tours, you know, where you've got packed stadiums like you would if you had a rock band. And he talks about science, although quite frankly, he is a bit of a rock band right, I suppose. We talk all the time on Geeky Guys that in the last sort of 5-10 years, it's become cool to be geeky again. It's also a bit cool to actually look at proper science again and you know, into it. And we think that's amazing.
It's an amazing time to be alive. Just, I mean, you look at how quickly, with regard to the vaccine for COVID, look how quickly we went from, wow, there's this terrible disease, to we have a vaccine that's mass produced that people can take the shot for. I mean, it was barely a year from the outbreak in China until the point that the first people were getting some of these vaccines. That is amazing.
What was impressive is the way that all the countries worked together very well.
Obviously, there was room for improvement, but I was still very impressed overall.
Most of the countries worked well. Yeah. But it was the way, the speed and the collaboration was just outstanding. Well, it had to be, let's be honest. Yeah. So we're gonna jump into our second feature, our last feature. It's quite cool. So it's called Geeky Guys, Did You Know? So this is where normally on when we've not got a guest on, we would try and out-trivia each other and see if we can come up with something that the other person doesn't know. Because me, Dave, and indeed Mr. Jethro are all pretty like-minded, so it's all sometimes a challenge. We absolutely will not out-trivia you at all, but we are interested to find out what you're going to tell us. But what we'll do first is, Dave, do you want to do our
geeky? Yeah, I'll give you a couple that I managed to find out. We share 96% of our DNA with primates such as chimpanzees, gorillas and orangutans, but we're also genetically related to bananas, with whom we share 50% of our DNA, and slugs, with whom we share 70% of our DNA.
Having met some people in the world, I can absolutely agree with that.
Second one then. There is an immortality drive aboard the International Space Station. Sounds really cool, doesn't it?
It does sound cool. What is that? I don't know what that is.
It contains the DNA of prominent people. It was taken there on a Soyuz spacecraft in 2008 and contains fully digitized DNA sequences of physicist Stephen Hawking, talk show host Stephen Colbert, Playboy model Joe Garcia, game designer Richard Garriott, novelist Tracy Hickman and Laura Hickman, wrestler Matt Morgan, and former athlete Lance Armstrong.
Wow.
That's weird, because they didn't ask us, did they, Dave?
No. So if you want to bring them back in the future, you're fine.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, what is the purpose of this?
I'm not being funny, but just isn't that slightly redundant? Because in the next 5 years, the ISS is going to be destroyed, dumped back into the atmosphere again, isn't it? They're retiring it.
Yeah, they paid a lot of money for nothing there, aren't they?
No, just because of cost, they're keeping it going a little bit longer. But it's, I think, within five, it's definitely within a couple of 5 years, maybe a couple.
Wow.
Of years, I think they were looking at dumping it.
Okay. So do you want science trivia or Star Trek trivia, or an intersection of the two?
Oh, if you've got an intersection of the two, that would be amazing.
Okay, well, I've got a funny one. This is more of a story than a trivia thing.
Okay.
So there are... Within the field of science, right? Typically speaking, when you have a scientific result, what happens is you do your experiment, you write up a paper that describes the results, and you send it to a scientific journal. The scientific journal will usually do this sort of peer review process where they will go through, some other experts will look it over, and they'll say, "I didn't think this was this compelling. I think you can do this other experiment," or "Actually, I think this is pretty good." And if the consensus is pretty good, then it's published and it's then available for everybody to have. Starting about just under 20 years ago, a few things called predatory scientific journals came online. So what these do is, somebody would publish this or write a science experiment up, they send it to the predatory journal, and they don't really do the peer review part. They basically just, they take what you have, you give them like $100 or whatever, because often you have to pay for publishing. It's a little bit funny, but we actually literally have to pay for publishing often. And they just will put it out there. And it's basically just a way for them to make money, right?
Right.
So late 2017, early 2018, some biologist who will remain nameless sent a paper to a couple of these journals. You can actually Google just the words "fake Voyager paper" and it comes out. And the paper title is titled something like "celerity-induced increased somatic mutation rate" or something like that. So celerity means speed. And then so speed-induced high mutation rate. The authors of the paper were Thomas Paris, Harry Kim, Falana Torres, Catherine Janeway, and the last author was like Lewis Zimmerman. The paper is framed like a real paper and actually cites other actual real papers in it. But if you read the results section, it just recounts the scenes in the episode Threshold, but all in science speak. It's basically just that. And it's funny because it even says, like, you know, two subjects were exposed to warp 10, and then we saw this increase of somatic mutation rate.
I was just about to say it went over their heads at warp 10.
Exactly. But there's, you know, it just got published, so it's out there. Now, it was funny. That's not the end of the story. So this was out there, and this actually got a little bit of press, and it was then taken offline because the journal got wind of this, like, oh, this obviously wasn't, this was obviously a joke. But what's funny is in Lower Decks, I think season 2, you remember there's an episode called "We'll Always Have Tom Paris."
Yes.
At one point in there, Boimler's talking about Tom Paris coming to the ship, and Mariner says, "Is he still a salamander?" And Boimler says, "No, that was a celerity-induced somatic mutation." It was like the title of that.
Nice.
Nice, I like that.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
That was a deep cut. I was like, wow.
Oh, I love that. That's funny. I remember the line in Lower Decks. Yeah. And now I love that context behind it. That's brilliant. And he's still a collector plate, of course, as well.
Yeah, of course, of course. That was a, awesome. That was a deep cut science trivia thing, sorry.
Oh, no, I like it. I absolutely love it. We briefly talked about your publications and things, touched on them earlier on. You wrote a book called Live Long and Evolve. Was that in 2018, I think it was?
Yeah, the full title is Live Long and Evolve, What Star Trek Can Teach Us About Evolution, Genetics, and Life on Other Worlds.
That's
the full title. Yeah, it literally is the introduction.
I was going to say what's it about, but...
Yeah, it's the introduction to genetics and evolution course that we teach here at Duke University. Also, basically, I should mention that course is also available on Coursera for free, that just general introduction to genetics and evolution. It's by me. I mean, you'll have me giving you the full introduction there on Coursera anyway.
You know what me and David doing straight after this, don't you? We're going to be learning about genetics.
Yeah, I'll have a look at that. We'll certainly read the book as well, won't we?
Absolutely.
But anyway, that book is basically the same coverage, but all framed using examples from Star Trek. So each section starts with a scene from an episode. So, for example, the part about evidence for evolution starts with a little clip, a little bit from In the Hands of the Prophets from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things where what's her name? Keiko. Keiko's talking about Kai Winn and saying, like, what next? Are we supposed to not talk about evolution and origin of the universe and things like that? Then I talk about, like, the backlash on evolution, especially here in the United States. And then you go through topic by topic based on representations in Star Trek. It's really fun.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's like cool. Is that the episode where she starts a school?
That is exactly the episode where she was starting the school. Yeah. Good.
It's been a while since I watched Deep Space Nine. My memory palace is still a little rusty, but yes. And it's a good one, that. So you have the book. You've also got a YouTube. You've also got some dentures. So a YouTube channel called Bio Trekkie.
That's correct, Bio Trekkie. So there's two threads within it. There's one set with if you search in YouTube for Bio Trekkie, BioTrekkie, you'll find all of it. I have one thread that I just call Bio Trekkie Explains, and that's basically like the talks I give at conventions. Some of them are full length talks, some of them are short versions that are like 6 or 8 minutes, and some are what I call super brief, which are only like 2 minutes. So, for example, I have one on Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 2 that just released earlier this month. You know, about the moopsie and basically like eating bones and things like that. So that's an example in there. The other thread I have on that channel is what's called Bio Trekkie with the Admiral. And that's with my friend Jane Brooke, who I mentioned we'd come back to later on. So she and I, what we've done is we go through episode by episode for Seasons 3 and 4, and hopefully in the future we'll do Season 5 of Star Trek Discovery. And what's nice is we take turns being teacher versus student. So I'll talk about a lot of the science that's depicted in there, what's the real science behind it or science inspired by it, things like that. She'll talk about the production side and say, like, how do you do a walk and talk when the hallway is only like 10 meters long? How do you make something look real with a green screen? All the sorts of sort of behind the scenes pieces that I wouldn't understand at all. But it's nice when we take turns being teacher and student to fully understand the context behind the show. It's a lot of fun because she is brilliant. She comes up with great, and even for the science, as I'm explaining something to her, she'll say, so that's like this, and she'll give this beautiful analogy. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm totally gonna work that into my classes from now on.
Thanks for that. I'm using it. Yeah,
we met at a convention. She's lovely.
She's wonderful.
I was gonna say, we've met her, haven't we, briefly at a convention a few years back, didn't we?
We'll put a link to that channel
on
at the end so people can find it. But unfortunately, we're about out of time, which is really annoying because I really want to talk more. So maybe we'll come back again after the next series of whatever's have come out, when they come out. Because obviously,
that'll be fun. Maybe when next season Strange New Worlds is out or something.
Yeah, that would be cool to do. But
one thing I was asked to ask you just quickly, Megan Elise Garrett.
I love Megan. She's one of my best friends.
Wongs of the Half. She said to mention to you about retroviruses and TV sci-fi. So she really enjoys the chats with you about that.
Oh my gosh, yeah. The retroviruses are always the way they try to make anything genetics work in sci-fi. So I always joke about, like, pretty much. My gosh, not another retrovirus thing. I mean, they work well, I'll grant that, but it's an easy crutch. I love Megan. She's fantastic. And Garrett as well, of course.
Yeah, they're great, aren't they?
Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. We will, of course, try and catch up with you again soon once the new series are out, and we can pick your brain maybe a little bit longer about some of these things. In the meantime, thank you very much. We've been the Geeky Guys, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.